First, I'd like to thank Dr. Parikh for inviting me here this afternoon to present to the Beltwide Cotton Conferences on one of the projects that I have been working this year. Basically, I titled the project Hybrid Nonwoven Technology for the Manufacture of Cotton Personal Care Wipes. Hybrid technology, I'll get into the definition of that later, but it's basically something that is old, but again, it's relatively new to the industry as a whole. Before I get in, I always like to look at the market and size the opportunity. And I do want to talk about, I don't know where the tens came from, but I guess those are the bullet points. Mm-hmm. The market of global wipes is a relatively large market. I was actually surprised with some of the numbers that have been quoted at $7.1 billion in 2006 across all categories. And all categories includes personal wipes, industrial wipes to some degree, a disposable, clean room, food service, et cetera. And it's growing at about 4 to 6% a year, which is still a pretty healthy clip. But the most interesting fact was that since 2001, it grew about 38%. There's been basically a major explosion in the use of disposable wipes across many, many market sectors, primarily in personal care. A lot of it is driven through the continued use of baby wipes, which is the biggest particular segment, but also the areas of household wipes, as you probably have seen on TV commercials. The North American market, being one of the largest, it's around $2.1 billion. And the baby wipe, pre-moistened baby wipe subsegment of that is around $850 million, plus or minus. This personal care wipe phenomena that has occurred globally is basically started around 2001, growing from about $3 billion to $4.5 billion. The data that we see in our industry varies significantly. I know Brian used INDA numbers. I think they're very good for raw goods, for base substrate. When you get to end products and consumer products, Walmart has pulled out from giving data to AC Nielsen's and the like. So very difficult to get good market research. And I tend to use Euromonitor because their data is pretty prevalent. And I get very frustrated as a player in the industry when I have four different sources and the numbers vary significantly by 10 to 30%. So I think the way to look at these is just directional and get an order of magnitude without being too specific. When you look at the classification of personal care wipes and you look at the potential projection on a 2006 to 2011 compound annual growth rate, obviously baby wipes, the big white ball up on top, around $3.5 billion, is around 3% growth going forward, but it is the big driver in the entire category. What's happened in recent years is that there's been a development of niche wipe applications in personal care and hygiene. Facial cleansing wipes, general purpose wipes, deodorant wipes, feminine hygiene wipes. And these, there's almost a wipe for any application you can think of. And think this has been fueling some of the growth. But more importantly, it gives the producers an ability to gain margin. The baby wipes are basically commodity products. If you look at their cost and their margins are not as good as you would think. But all the other ones that are coming out today are really niche, high margin, specialty type of products and are good for the development of the wipe materials and the substrates that go into them. The baby wipe market, again, going back to North America, retail sales were about 850 to around 2003, they've declined a little bit. I think somebody mentioned earlier in the presentations that baby diapers and baby number of babies in North America have decreased. They have, in fact, probably in the last 5 to 10 years, they've decreased about 10%. And I think the baby wipe category has seen this decrease. It does continue to drop for a couple of reasons besides just the number of babies. One is that the proliferation of the wipe market, as I described before, is now coming in, and people that use baby wipes for cleaning their faces or removing lipstick or just basically antibacterial type cleaning their hands after some uses have switched to the specialty wipes, then decreasing the total volume of baby wipes. So that's one of the reasons. pricing has gone up in recent years as most of the raw material prices have escalated, so that the numbers are somewhere between 800 and 850. And the market is mature. What happens with most of these markets after baby wipes, and I was involved with that particular introduction in North America, was introduced in 1974. And so it's been around a long time. And after 30-some plus years, it becomes mature. And so what we're seeing also is a very mature market in this particular category. So what happens when the market is mature? You have to look at product innovation. When sales start to lag, the manufacturers start to look at ways to rejuvenate their particular brands. They're offering products with advanced formulas. They target specific needs of consumers that have not been addressed until recently, and they look at specific demographics. Also, you look at trends of what happens when you're in this situation as well. And obviously, the marketing drive kicks in, and you start looking at, consumer packaging and coming up with better dispensing mechanisms, new fragrances. They look at different types of lotions, all pretty small type of improvements. One of the ones that has always been in the background is looking at cotton-based substrates for the use in baby wipes, but not just baby wipes, on personal care wipes. As a result of this and the fact that people want to get more textile-like characteristics in their wipe products, spun lace has basically grown significantly in the baby wipe category globally. I'm not a very big advocate of spun lace. I'm sorry you guys are putting in a pilot line, but I think it makes the most textile-like nonwoven out there. My only problem is that it's expensive. And in baby wipes, absorbent capacity is extremely important. And there are other substrates, like the one I'm going to discuss today, that give you those properties much better than spun lace at a better price. The other area that is a growing a trend, and it will continue to grow, is flushability. Basically, today, a lot of wipes in this area are claiming flushability, but they truly are not. Okay, I was asked earlier also by Brian, is why don't people use more than 2% cotton in nonwovens? And one of the reasons is it doesn't process well in equipment. It basically limits itself to two technologies, carding and spun lace, which is a carding technology as well. So when you really look at that, it puts itself, not only because the fiber historically has been at a higher price than some other synthetic fibers, it doesn't compete well on the process where spun melts, like spun bond, SMS, melt blown, have really taken over the market in the disposable segments. This is a little bit of a, I should have changed this slide, but historically cotton has always been more expensive than polypropylene and polyethylene. Up until about 3 years ago, or 3.5 years ago, it has reversed. So I think there's a great opportunity to see more cotton in products today. That's only occurred in the last 3.5 years, and there's usually that lag of development time in industry, and should we do it, and shouldn't we do it? But I think the opportunity is there to see cotton come into play more. And one of the main reasons it hasn't been used historically was that it was perceived, or it was more expensive. There are a lot of benefits of cotton wipes or having cotton in disposable wipes. One is biodegradability. Cellulose is biodegradable. Now, I have a lot of associates that will argue with me, but when you look at it, cellulose is still probably the most biodegradable material out there at the 90%+ level. Certainly much better than polyester or polyethylene or polypropylene, which are the other fibers that it competes in this category with. It's environmentally friendly. It's a renewable resource. It's absorbent, has natural feel, wet strength, has softness, and it has flexibility. So it brings a lot of good characteristics to the products, to the materials, to the wipes themselves. The other thing is, and I think this is one of the biggest driving points, and I think this is why I do really believe that cotton will be used more in these disposables, is that many consumer studies through the years that I have had conducted or that I've seen data and market research on show that consumers view cotton key attributes, the softness of natural fiber, the less irritation, as appealing not only in baby wipes, but in personal care wipes products as a whole. It's very big. It's 80% of the people, when they see cotton, oh, they like it. And, you know, we have, in many cases, and I don't remember the products, but where we have paid to have the cotton logo there as a selling point, as a marketing feature. Okay, we have used cotton-like adjectives to describe nonwovens, you know, repeatedly in our product and in many of our product categories. So it is really a big, big driver for consumer preference. One of the, I'd say, major wipes converters, they are fairly large, they're probably number three or four in the U.S., has launched a baby wipe containing product with cotton. They did that several years ago, but it's been a niche product and it's more on the premium segment. The major brands historically, primarily because of cost, have not done that. But I do believe that that could change. And if I were to you know, speculate, I think, you know, both Kimberly-Clark and Procter & Gamble, which dominate, they have 80 to 90% of the baby wipe market in the U.S., either one of them can do that relatively easy with their technologies that they have in place to manufacture the substrates. The other trend, we talked about flushability, and I could also say combined with that, biodegradability. And I think there is a need for a truly flushable wipe today. And I define true flushability. I started my career in tissue and towel, toilet tissue, hygienic papers. And we had a definition back then as to what flushability meant. And it basically means behaving like toilet tissue in the sanitary waste disposal system. Technically, toilet tissue disperses within feet of the P-trap on a commode. It basically disintegrates right as it is going downstream, not too far away from the commode itself. I personally, knowing what I know, I never would flush any of the wipes that claim flushability today, especially if you have a septic system. I think you're playing with a disaster. If you live in an old house with an old drainage system that may have some tree roots sticking out or some broken pipes, you're just asking to have it plugged. I'm amazed that the companies that are doing this should know better and that you shouldn't be advertising it that strongly. Apparently, the number of complaints is small enough that they're willing to take the Roto-Rooter bills that they get. Also, biodegrading similarly in post-treatment. A lot of these biodegradable materials, they sit there in the filters and the screens for periods of months before they finally degrade or they end up in the sludge system of a secondary treatment plant. So a lot of the wipes really don't perform. Also, depending on the size and the thickness and the way they're bonded, biodegradability and flushability becomes a problem. So I think, again, that's an opportunity that's been there. A lot of players have tried it in toilet tissue, pre-moistened toilet tissue, which is another very, very large potential category. They've not been successful. I think the technology is teetering. I think within the next 5 years, you'll probably see the breakthrough and you'll probably see a lot more wipes truly become biodegradable. So where does it lead to? I want to talk about this hybrid nonwoven process now. I kind of set this tone for what the opportunity could be, and it's fairly large for those who are willing to take the chance. I define hybrid as a hybrid nonwoven process. And I thought I was clever. I thought I came up with this, and I read it in a magazine 3 years ago. I said, well, it's a great name, Rick. Somebody else thought of, ahead of you to use it. But it describes basically taking two existing processes and combining them together to deliver a new nonwoven material, perhaps with some synergy and characteristics. There's several of those processes right now that are commercial. One of them is a spun bond and spun lace. Spun bond is a melt spun polypropylene type material. Spun lace is a hydraulic kneading process. And what they do is they combine the staple fiber characteristics that spun lace brings with the strengths of spun bond, and they get some pretty nice substrates. I think PGI, one of the major nonwoven companies, has just launched a line of products with this type of technology. There's always the spun bond and melt blown. Typically, when this started out, they were done by lamination offline, where they took melt blown and spun bond and combined them. Now it's done online as a one-step operation. Then there's melt blown and air forming, and this is the one that I want to talk about a little bit more detail. And there's another one, tissue and spun lace. Again, combining conventional tissue paper making as a way to bring short fibers onto a staple substrate and blending them through the use of hydraulic needles. So a little bit more about melt blown and air forming. This is an old process. The original patents were issued in 1976, long since expired, 12 years after they've been expired. To the best of my knowledge, there's only one company that's outside of these two companies that developed the original technology that now has it. And that's the project that I've been working on. It was really captive to two companies. One was Kimberly-Clark, and Kimberly-Clark focused their melt-blown and air-forming technology, which they called CoForm, to make wipes, to make absorbent products. One of the original intents was to make toilet tissue, believe it or not. The other company was 3M, and they did it slightly different. Instead of using short fibers, they used staple fibers, and they combined a staple fiber with melt-blown. And one of their key products with this technology is called Thinsulate, and it's an insulating type of fabric that's used in ski wear, gloves, et cetera. They've been very successful. These are old. They've been around for 30 years. And what's happened is when you do that and they're captive to a company, they're kind of constrained because you tend to, you know, be focused in their own boxes of product lines, technologies, core competencies, and therefore the entrepreneurial innovation, because this technology was captive to them, has really never occurred with the materials and the process. And the process is very, very flexible because it allows a combination of either short or staple fibers with a variety of different melt-spinnable polymers. So now you have an option to optimize the polymer base on the melt-spun side, as well as you can look at short and a variety of different staple fibers as well. A very basic description or simple description of the process is here. One, you start with the polymeric resin, and you add your additives, processing aids, pigments, surfactants, what have you, and you run it through an extruder, and you basically form a melt-blown web. I'll describe melt-blown a little bit more later. And what you do then on that basic melt-blown machine is you blow through an air former a fiber, whether it's a short fiber, could be pulp, could be a cotton linter, or it could be a staple fiber, whether it's synthetic or cellulosic. And you blow that into the melt-blown stream to form a web. And then that web can be laminated, and you can do this in line. You can have a top layer of another nonwoven and also a bottom layer of another nonwoven. So you can end up with a tri-laminate right on the base process. You consolidate it through some form of thermal bonding, and you wind it. So it's a very compact, very simple process to run. It was originally designed at Kimberly-Clark for short wood pulp fibers. Roll pulp is a very easy material to dispense. It comes in rolls, very uniform. They use a defibrator to separate the fibers individually. And the system that was used was a textile type defibrator based on a licorin cloth type roll running at high speed. And it was very cumbersome. And it was designed because they wanted to match the width of the defibrator with the width of the melt-blown stream. And that was one of the impasses. And this is one of the reasons why no one else outside that company until now has looked at that process, because it was cumbersome, expensive, and you're basically hanging this defibrator in midair because it's sitting on top of your forming wire. And also, the melt-blown, I wanted to talk a little bit more about that. I don't know if you know what that is. I'm sure you do, but in the case, melt-blown is a melt-spinnable technology. It uses a very high melt flow rate polymer in the 1200 range. Typically, it was polypropylene. And what it does is it spins a very thin fiber in the range of 0.5 to 5 microns, very, very thin. It's a very weak fiber as well. And what happens in this process when you're combining either a short or a staple fiber with the melt-blown is yet you intertwine the staple or short fibers into the melt-blown fiber. So you get mechanical interlocking as a result of this mixture. And there is some discussion that there are some electrostatic forces, especially if you use polypropylene, to hold the short fibers or the staple fibers in place. So it's a great technology because it does not use any chemicals. You don't even need to use thermal bonding. If you have the right ratio of polymer, you have a pretty strong fabric by itself. Actually, since it's a small group, this is not cotton linters. This is an example of what that technology life would look like if you can pass them around. I would like it back at the end of the presentation, though. And also, the melt spinning system allows for use of other polymers, which can be biodegradable or flushable. Typically, it was polypropylene, but I think today, with the new polymers that are coming out, you can spin a biodegradable or a water soluble type of fiber. So now you have a combination of, can you add cotton and can you add biodegradability to a white material? So we discussed about, you know, the different types of polymers. Melt-blown today has been used a variety of different polymers, nylons, polyesters, polyethylenes, primarily polypropylenes. There are a lot of new biodegradable fibers that can be spun, and they can be spun in melt-blown lines, PLAs, polyhydroxyl alkanoates, aliphatic copolyesters, polyethylene oxides, and polyvinyl alcohols. These are all spinnable and can be run on this type of process. So with these type of polymers, you have the added benefit of perhaps biodegradability or flushability. What we did sometime earlier this year at the request of a client who said, Rick, can you do this? And I said, sure, let me think about it. And I said, okay. And what I did basically is develop a new device to eliminate the need for this very cumbersome textile-like liquorin-type defibrator air former that's hanging in the middle of the forming wire, developed basically a device to uniformly distribute fibers in an airstream, where we can take fibers that are being air-vaded in a circular duct and spread them out, typically between 1.5 to 2 meters wide, and get a very good basis weight profile distribution across that width. Also, the unit is modular, so if you want to go to 4 meter wide lines, I can put two of these together and basically distribute the fibers uniformly. So what we, in essence, have done with this new idea, which I've patented, is basically break away from the cumbersome processes that both 3M and Kimberly-Clark have been using. And it opens the door for other people to invest in the technology and be able to manufacture these type of substrates. And When Dr. Parikh mentioned, and I said, well, you know, I've got an idea. I know you can run cotton liners through this unit. It's a drop-in. It would probably make something very close to that fabric that you saw. I don't know what the benefit would be. Cotton liners, I still think, are a little bit more expensive than wood pulp. But the idea is that you can add cotton claims to your wipes now. So I think that would be one of the things you could do with the cotton liner a possibility. I would think the fabric characteristics would be very similar. Looking at different blends of melt-blown and polypropylene, typically the fabrics that you're seeing are 40-60 to 60-40. When you keep the ratio at this level with the polymer, with the melt-blown, you'll have enough integrity that you will have very little linting of the fibers, even if you'd have short fibers like the cotton linter fiber. If you really want to get some more cotton fiber benefits, you'd have to change the forming system. But this process step is something that is well understood, and we can do that as well. And what you do basically now is, instead of going from a bale defibration system or a rolled pulp defibration system, you go to a more conventional textile fiber prep system, where you start with the bale opener, your fiber opening. You basically create a bat of cotton fibers, pretty thick, and then you run that through what I would call an airlay card. And this device, to some of us who've been around a few years, would be similar, not the same, to a Randall Weber or a Ferrer airlay card, now owned by Neumag. So you take it and you form this thick bat of fibers, and you run it again through an airlay card that looks something like this, where the staple fiber feed comes in, it gets picked, almost individual fibers, by an airlay card, and it gets doffed with a high-velocity airstream, and that vacuum-forming section where I have it pointing to that basically goes into your melt-blown fiber stream. And that's how you would inject staple fibers into the melt-blown, and you would end up with a material that probably has better aesthetic characteristics than cotton linters. Again, how would it look on a melt-blown line? If you wanted to double the capacity, you would have two beams. You would come in from both sides. So you can see this device also would have to be hung on top of the forming wire, so you're limited as to how many beams, but certainly you can run two beams that way and have pretty good capacities. Typically, the throughputs on these units run about 1.65 meters, around 300 kilograms an hour. So you have a pretty good throughput on the material. The cost structure for these type of units, when you look at the capital required, the machines are in the $6 to $9 million range, and this is for a 1.65 meter wide unit. Production 1,800 to 3,800 metric tons, whether you use one beam or two beams. Efficiencies of 85% and waste of 8, these are conservative numbers. I think if you're a very good manufacturing company, you can get over 90 and you can reduce it under 5, but this is conservative. And raw material cost, my latest cost on cotton, about 1,000 to 1,200 a metric ton, and polypropylene at 1,600 a metric ton. So when you really look at it, this could be a cost diluent. Now, when you start looking at PLAs and PHAs, that you're in the $2,500, $2,800 a ton. So again, the polymer would be a little bit more expensive if you're looking at biodegradability and flushability. Keeping a ratio of 55 to 45, you go through the analysis, and you're ending up with about $2.40 a kilo. And for a 65 GSM material, which is the typical basis weight of most wipes out there, you're looking around 16 to 17 cents a square meter. And if you compare that with spunlace, I don't think you're going to do much better than this. The cheapest spunlace probably is at 18, and most spunlaces that I've been familiar with are in the mid-20s. So again, good performance and at a reasonable price. No, with the biodegradable, that cost would go up. It probably would get it up into the mid-20s, but you'd have biodegradability. Now, I don't know what spunlace would do when you do the same thing with their fibers. I think they track proportionally. I think that delta in cost would follow whether you use biodegradable fibers in spunlace versus the melt-blown. So what are the opportunities? Basically, you can modify a forming system to take an old process and try to do something new with it. And this uniqueness of properties that you could impart in the material with cotton would certainly be there. No one's doing this, by the way. A lot of people that I talk to, a lot of my clients says, well, Rick, nobody's asking for it. And I say, of course not. Nobody's doing it yet. You've got to tell them. It's new. And for some reason, there's this follow the herd mentality. Nobody wants to be the first ones. They're great at following. Spunlace is a great example, but everybody's got the same thing. You end up with a commodity product. Everybody's beating their head against the wall because of pricing, and nobody's happy. But somebody's got to take the step forward and do something new. This is an opportunity, and I think the risk is relatively small from a capital standpoint. And it allows for participation in a large growing market of personal care wipes with a new product. I focused it on wipes. I think this would be a terrific process to make wound care. If you can take cotton fibers with, let's say, polypropylene, take the ratio to 80% cotton, 20% polypropylene, put a gauze top and bottom, and you'd have a terrific absorbent as a wound care. So they've got great opportunities outside of wipes as well. It takes somebody with some creative juices and knowing the market and the products to try to figure out how to optimize this. So I, would like to thank you for your attention. That was my presentation. And if you have any questions, I could try to address them now, or you can hit me at the break.